Hmm. The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
It's your Daily Dose of Donna, and we have such a special bonus episode for all you dosers today. We have the fabulous Chalene Johnson from the Chalene Show podcast and her Patreon and her Instagram and her YouTube. Once you see her, you can't stop seeing her. I feel like she's everywhere. But
oh, dear.
Welcome to Daily Dose. I'm so happy you're here.
I'm here every day. I am a doser.
It's so cool. And you guys, I've talked about it a little briefly, especially I think on Patreon, but I started following you years ago because, and I can't wait to kind of hear your journey in this online space because you have a huge following. How many Instagram followers do you have approximately? Do you know off the top of your head?
Over 800,000 there, over a million on Facebook, and I think 800,000 on TikTok. I think we're at 350.
You're on YouTube. How many?
On YouTube, 350, I think.
Okay, so really small, like tiny. You're like a tiny.
Been doing this a long time.
No followers. You are a huge, huge person in the online space. And I found you years ago because someone said you have to follow Chalene if you want help on Instagram, like if you want Instagram tips. So as someone like me who has gone through pivot after pivot, can you explain kind of how you went from that to where we are now talking about all the things? Yeah. And we'll get into it.
Well, first of all, I've been doing it for a long, long, long time. So my career has taken lots of iterations and it's just always me following whatever I'm freaking obsessed with. So I think probably most people know me from late night infomercials. I did fitness infomercials for years. I've had several number one fitness infomercials. I've sold tens of millions of exercise DVDs. I'm in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Okay, wait. I knew you were in fitness because I watch your YouTube, but I didn't know that you were on infomercials selling tons. So what years were was this happening?
The early 2000s, I started creating programs for fitness clubs. Like my programs were called Turbo Kick, Pio, Hip Hop Hustle. They were in all the 24-hour fitnesses, all the major, like the big chain clubs. We sold our programs there. And then that was like about the same time that Taibo was getting really popular. So
that's what I was doing. I was working out with the Blanks brothers here in LA.
Took many classes there myself. And all the gyms really wanted Taibo, but he didn't have a program that worked in the clubs. And that's what I had created. So I, came in and was like selling that to all the different health clubs. And eventually it was just in health clubs. And then eventually infomercial companies were looking for like the next Windsor Pilates, Taibo workout. And so I got my first infomercial deal in 2004 and was in the infomercial space for about, 15 years. And I walked away.
Is the infomercial space like similar? Would you put it on par with like a QVC in terms of number one, is there still infomercials on? Like, are there on?
A little bit. Not much. Yeah, not much. I mean, because think about it, we TiVo or we record everything. We watch everything on demand. And infomercials were successful because people were channel surfing.
And there was nothing else on.
That's right. So if you could be captivating, and I filmed my infomercials on my iPhone.
Stop.
Like, I was like, I don't need hair and makeup. I don't need a script. Let me just talk. Let me just be honest. And so, yeah. And but it was in the fitness industry, and I hadn't studied fitness or hadn't thought I was going to be a fitness influencer or anything like that. It was just something I enjoyed doing, and I could see a need for this product. And so when I was doing infomercials, now suddenly I'm a brand. Now suddenly I'm the consumer product. Yeah. And it really effed with my body image. It was really hard to show up on set and be scrutinized. And, talk about people leaving negative comments under a YouTube video. When people are commenting on your body and whether the program is effective or not based on your body, it just did a number on me and it became really, really unhealthy. I got orthorexic and was doing terribly unhealthy things to get my weight lower because I was being asked to be smaller. I was constantly being asked to be leaner.
And for everyone that's listening and doesn't know what orthorexia, I'm pretty sure it's just being ultra aware of what you're putting in your body, like counting everything. And well, what is the actual?
Yeah, it's not recognized by the, is it the DSM? It's not,
you're asking the wrong person.
It's not technically recognized in the way that other EDs, I'm going to say EDs because this will show up on YouTube, other EDs are, but generally I'll just say for myself, it was a fear of food. It was I was exercising 4 hours a day. Oh, I was eating very little food and just in a really unhealthy place, looking into a camera and telling people, hey, you can get these results too in just 30 minutes a day. I mean, literally those are the words I said when I made a decision in my head, like, I can't do this again. That's a lie. Yeah. I can't. It's a lie for me anyways. Maybe somebody else can get these results in 30 minutes a day, but I'm killing my, this is nothing. This has nothing to do with health for me. So for my own health, I need to retire and I need to step back. And so that is when I transitioned into understanding social media. And I started taking online courses and workshops and seminars and, you know, taking and learning from all these people who today are, a lot of people make videos about them, calling them grifters and scammers and, you know, people who take advantage of, but I have a different perspective because I wouldn't be where I am today if I hadn't learned, if I hadn't paid for those courses, if I hadn't gone to those seminars and learned from those experts.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say there are a handful of people out there that are, I would consider typical like scammer, grifter or whatever, but I learned a lot. I took an Amy Porterfield class. I remember when I first started my online business in 2018 and it really, I had no idea what anything was. I didn't understand the first thing about it. So you can't really deny that there are really incredible people out there that teach.
Absolutely.
And help.
Yeah. Yeah. And not everyone's going to be successful at it, but that's kind of life. Right. And so
just like everything else.
Right. I mean, in fact, it was, once I left, I really wanted to write a book. I had to learn. I took courses to learn how to write the process of writing a New York Times bestselling book has nothing to do with what's written in the book. You know what I mean? It's all the other things. And I had to learn those things in order to make the list. And so I have a unique perspective in that I've been in some of these industries and I've been on the outside. And so I like looking at things from both perspectives.
Yeah, you do. I mean, I think that's nice because you're not coming at it and just, we're going to get into this 10 part. Well, now you're working on part 11, I think, of the Rachel and Dave Hollis deep dive on your Patreon, which you guys, when I tell you, I've talked about this already so many times, but I'm not getting paid to talk about it. I'm talking about it because it's so bingeable. It's so addictive. It's like the best possible kind of content if you're into this stuff. And we'll get into how we got into Rachel and Dave. But you don't come at any of this from a snarky place. And you talk about this in your series that there are people on YouTube, we all see them, who really like to kind of tear apart influencers or tear apart, you know, other people on social media.
Everything.
That's not really your vibe. You come at it from an observer. I feel like it's more observational, right?
Because I think both things can be true, you know? And I think the algorithm serves us up so much of what we already believe so that we get caught up in this echo chamber and we think everybody believes this way and I am right. And we stop looking at the other perspective or what could also be true. And we have less empathy and then we're more divided. And I think it's ruining our mental health. I think if you talk to even the people who are making that kind of content, it takes a toll on you. It's this weird thing. Like when you get stuck in an echo chamber, it really does have an impact on your mental health. Yeah. And I think that's the piece when I started this project, I was like, oh, it'll maybe be like two episodes. I'm just going to share some of my insider insight because I ran in those same circles. I was in those masterminds. Those are people who I have on my phone roll. You know what I mean? And I know some of the things that aren't being said in the story. And I thought, I'll just kind of like spill a little bit of tea. But as I started digging into it, I realized it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
And then I started like doing the storytelling piece of it. And I don't know if you ever listened to the podcast Serial.
It's no, you are the new Serial. Like I've told you that. I said like Someone call Wondery. Someone call like these amazing. And I mean, honestly, teach me a class of how to do a deep dive podcast with the music and everything. You do that all yourself?
It's ridiculous. It's really not advisable. But yeah.
What software are you using to edit the music? And with this, are you using GarageBand? Like, what are you doing?
Well, so that's where my past life comes into play. So I mixed music. That's how I learned to mix of the tracks for my original fitness programs. I learned how to mix in sound effects and, you know, mix songs so that they were dance songs. And so I knew how to mix music. And I'm just going to toot my own horn. I'm really good at music. Like, I understand how to move people's emotions with music. I always have. And so this was really fun for me.
Like, forget DJ James Kennedy. We've got DJ Shalene. I mean, can't you do? It's crazy. So but yes, you guys, the quality of these deep dives are, it doesn't feel like you're just kind of listening to a Patreon. It feels like you're listening to a professional paid podcast. So why Rachel and Dave, and why we both started talking about this, when I've told my story briefly, but I'll say it again, if you guys don't know, because believe it or not, there are people out there that still have no idea who Rachel Hollis is. This morning at my gym, I was talking to a girlfriend and I brought her up because recently we have a mutual friend who was on her podcast, and I brought up Rachel Hollis, and this girl goes, "Who's that?" I said, "Wait, you don't know who she is? She wrote Girl Wash Your Face." She said, "No, I don't know." And I'm like, "Oh, we're so in a bubble here. You don't realize
there are people who don't know who Kyle and Mauricio are." I'm like,
"Okay, that's insane."
Yeah, that's true.
Rachel and Dave Hollis, she was to everything to me in 2000. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing to say out loud, but in 2015 to 2017, I would say those years, I was just like, I couldn't get enough of her content. I felt like she was my inspiration, my goals. She got me up in the morning early. Really? She got me to do. Oh, I was like a hardcore, you know, they had those challenges, like wake up early and drink more water and stop eating this. And I became like a crazy person about it. But that's what I'm saying. There was a part of her and what she taught that actually did help me, I think, in my own personal life. So there was a moment there that I think I'm really grateful for everything. But what has transpired with the two of them has just been, it's blown my mind. How did you get into, or did you ever know them? How did you get into the whole Rachel and Dave story?
First, I just have to ask quickly.
Yeah.
Donna, when you watched the two of them together, was there any kind of this doesn't feel real, or that this isn't how couples really interact? Or were you like, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid?
I mean, at first, okay, so this is, we can be honest here. At first, I loved her when she was just on her own. I never really liked when Dave joined at those first times. I always felt like when he was, because it was like the morning show. And remember, this is before COVID. This is like early 2017. Right. And when he would join, I would always feel like she would act different. I liked her when she was on her own. And then I started noticing little digs, like she would tell him his breath smelled, which was so uncomfortable to watch as a viewer, even though at the time, by the way, there was only 50 people watching. When I was watching her. So she knew my name. I met her. Wow. I interviewed for her. So that's like a whole other story. But I felt like I was hanging out with friends, but I always felt when he was there, it was like an uncomfortable dynamic. And then when he started doing his own content right off the bat, I was bored by it. I never really was like that into him. I always thought she was better on her own. I felt like she was annoyed with him. Did you get that kind of a vibe?
I have since watching all their videos in the last several months. I've watched hundreds and like maybe thousands of hours in doing this deep dive. Initially, my relationship with them was my husband and I are about 10 years older than they are, maybe even a couple years older than that. And we were doing business together. After I stepped away from the fitness side of things, we started doing seminars together. We would go online together. We would teach a concept we called smart success, which was about like how to prioritize the most important areas of your life. And we had written a New York Times bestselling book.
Who organized you guys together? Like under what you did together? So you guys would like connect and be like, let's do the seminar together?
Yes. Oh, Brett and I.
Oh,
my husband,
I thought you meant you and Rachel.
Sorry, no. So we were doing this just like probably, you know, like 5 to 10, probably about 5 years before Rachel and Dave were doing that.
Oh, cool.
And then had the New York Times bestselling book. And then we were in the mastermind groups with the same people. And you know, then she had this incredible rise of to fame. And I, you know, one of the things that we were, it's so important to Brett and I, is helping people to avoid some of the things that we encountered early in our marriage as working business partners, which was, it nearly destroyed our marriage. There was a time when there was just, we were kind of in that same kind of rat race that I felt like they were in 2018. And it, our own marriage almost ended. And wow. It was my husband who had to say, like, I'm not happy with this. No. This is too much.
Is that because of the public pressure? Is it because you guys were workaholics and like you couldn't really enjoy life because it was all about work? Is it because you had kids? Because you have kids with him. So now they're grown, but how old were they at this time?
They were young. I don't know exactly the age, but it was all the things that you just said, Donna. It was feeling like all these opportunities are coming our way and they might go away. So we better take them. And then you get caught and then you're going so fast. So you're never actually connecting with your partner to say like, are we good? And you're taking date nights, but you're doing date nights and you're still thinking about work and talking about work and you're just going so fast and the opportunities keep coming and you feel like they're going to go away and you're never really being honest in terms of a conversation with each other. And at least we weren't until that moment. And yeah, I was definitely addicted to work. Mm-hmm. And my husband, I learned, was addicted to gambling.
Yeah. And so talk about this, because you bring this up during this part, this 10 part series, and I don't know the details about this. I'm so curious. Yeah.
Well, something wasn't right. You know, I could sense that we were both like off and I, suspected, you know, with women's intuition, I'm like, he's being very secretive. He's kind of like hiding his phone. He's kind of going off and doing things on his phone. And
you're thinking he's having an affair.
That's right. And so I ordered the phone records.
Stop it.
And I just saw 800 number after 800 number after 800 number. And I thought, oh, is this like a porn line or something? And I called the first one, you know, within seconds and realized it was like a gambling line. And so then I had enough information to do a deep dive. And I just, you know, was very calm and pleasant for a couple of days while I just pulled all the receipts and it was like a, you know, it was the most amazing thing that's ever happened to us because I was in an addiction too, you know? And mine is more socially acceptable.
Totally.
Than, you know, some other form of addiction. But I think a work addiction can be just as detrimental and damaging to a family, to relationships, to your mental health, all your physical health, all those things. And so we did this big turnaround. And when I saw, you know, to bring back to Dave and Rachel, when I saw them, and I'm like speeding through several years of therapy and, you know, screaming, fighting, and, you know, all those things. But we came together and we're stronger. And I just believe it's one of the best things that could have ever happened in our marriage because
I understand that completely. Yeah.
Sometimes you have to have an implosion to come back together. And so then it's always been really important to me. And I'm very, very opinionated when I see couples who say their family comes first, mm-hmm. but they're doing all the things that are detrimental to their family.
So and what so about Rachel and Dave kind of like, set off those red flags?
Kind of after we were, you know, back on solid ground and we saw them and just knew, we knew.
Right off
the
bat.
This is going to be bad. This is going to be bad. This is going to end. This is not going to end well. So that was really all I knew about them at the time. I was very careful never to say their names, but in my podcast and my teachings, I would always talk about, you know, couples. And there's plenty of them still today who everyone calls them couples goals. And they're like, oh, I want to be like them. And I want to do this and do this. And you look at their successes but you just don't really realize what's going on behind closed doors and how much 100%. Is missing. 100%. And so that was it for them. You know, we were kind of like talked about them in a cautionary way, but very never referenced their names. And then after he died last year, so many people asked me about it and asked if I could, you know, speak on it. And I just knew so many things from friends in that circle that I wanted to kind of just kind of shed some light on things that people didn't know. And I started doing my deep dive and realized it was so much more complex than what we thought it was. That so many of the narratives that people believe about Rachel or believed about Dave were, if not completely wrong, misguided. And sometimes they were wrong because of the way Dave and Rachel painted the narrative. You know?
Yeah, I mean, for anyone that is just kind of interested, Dave and Rachel, it started with Rachel, really. Her career kind of blew up as this, you know, mom of, at the time, three boys. And then she ended up going through the adoption and fostering journey. And I remember I was crying alongside with them, like when they lost their foster children. I mean, I was so in, and so many women that I've spoken to were also like drinking the Kool-Aid, like going to the RISE conferences. And, but she was the, and I wonder if this is part of this, this struggle that I think that you're seeing in terms of all the layers. It was her baby. It was her business. It was her brand. He was a working corporate guy here at Disney, and he was, you know, going every day to his job. He wasn't on social media unless he would just be randomly on hers. And then slowly, slowly, he kind of, I think he got that taste of fame. He got that taste of followers. He got the taste of that dopamine that we all get on social media of like, people like me, I'm getting the likes.
Yeah.
And I think that pulled him out of taking, you know, continuing at Disney. And then he started working, I mean, you could say with her, but for her, let's be real. So that was kind of the first thing that you started to say about Dave. He had an addiction, I would say, to public approval. No?
Yeah. I think Dave, what you'll learn as future episodes that you we haven't even released yet, you'll learn that these things started long before he left Disney. And, you know, even though the narrative, their narrative, what they wrote in their books and what they said on podcasts, because we all have a narrative, right? Like I just told you about the last 15 years of my life in 30 seconds. That's a narrative. You know what I mean? And we condense things and we exaggerate things and we try to make a point and we package things in such a way that it's consumable for people. And their consumable story was that Dave left Disney because he'd had so much success that it was no longer fulfilling. And we believe that seems logical. Okay, we like that narrative. And now we later learn that he steps into this role with his wife, who's the queen of the ball. Like everybody knows Rachel Hollis. She's selling millions of books. She's on every single podcast. She's on every single morning show. Every single network marketing organization is bringing her in to be the lead speaker. And there's an immediate shift in their power dynamic when he's formerly the breadwinner and now she's not just a breadwinner, but she's the golden girl.
Totally.
And he's trying to find his footing. He's trying to figure out where his significance and importance is. And they suddenly become, the couple becomes a brand.
What do you and think? What do you think? Sorry to interrupt. What do you think was the conversation that they had about him leaving Disney? Do you think that he approached her and said, I kind of want some of what you're getting? Or like in that kind of way, like this is too good. I want some of it. Or do you think she said, I need help. I'm getting overwhelmed. There's this business is getting huge. I need your help.
Well, certainly it's all speculative, right? Because that's all that we can do. So I'm not saying I know this for a fact, but I have uncovered obscure podcast interviews with Dave talking about his time at Disney and how he was in a deep, dark, depressive state. And drinking way too much. And it was taking a toll on him and something had to change. Now, for those of you who followed their story, you know that that's the story he told as if that's how he felt because he was suddenly in a place, personal development, that he felt skeptical of and didn't feel like he belonged. And he had this imposter syndrome. But the truth of the matter is Dave had those demons before he left Disney. And the truth of the matter is when we have demons like that, and you even if you're going to therapy, if you don't go all the way there, I mean, you can even have the best therapist, but if you're unwilling to go all the way there and unpack all of your childhood traumas, then you just keep bringing that trauma to the next geographical location.
Yeah, wherever you go, there you are. It's literally, I thought about this so much because they got up right after, and I'll never forget, you know, it's like, where were you when you saw this article, et cetera. I'll never forget it. I was sitting in my office Because I used to go to deadline.com, that website, which is like the industry website, that it's a website that you go to if you work in the business, in the show, like entertainment world, because it tells you exactly who's been cast on what has been greenlit, what executives got a job, you know. It's like Backstage, Hollywood Reporter, Variety, but it's very industry specific. And I'll never forget getting an article, going on deadline.com and seeing Dave Hollis's face. And it says Dave Hollis has resigned or whatever, and he's going to go join Chic Media at the time. Yeah. I think it was called Chic Site, you know, with Rachel Hollis. And I remember seeing that at that moment thinking, oh my gosh, this is obviously, you know, we kind of saw it coming behind the scenes, but this is what he thinks is going to, you know, explode their company, explode their world. They moved to Texas. I remember this like yesterday. They sell their house for cash. They move to Texas. They buy everything. You know, she talked all the time about this, like how we have all the cash. We bought it all. They buy a huge building. Remember, they bought this huge building to like house all their employees and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they got up and like, they just left LA and started over. And all of a sudden Dave was a self-help guy. Yeah. Like within one day, he went from being a development guy at Disney to coming online every day and having motivational conversations with his audience.
But they really, you know, all the many interviews and lives I've watched of the two of them, he just kind of will repeat whatever the woman who's sitting next to him says.
I am almost so
like
happy.
An Ed McMahon, you know what I mean? It was like very shticky.
I am so happy you brought this up, because you say this in one of your episodes, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad you're talking about this. What we call word salad, right?
Oh yeah.
Dave Hollis was the king of word salad. He spoke, it's almost like he had to compete to get that many words in a certain sentence. Like, how many words can I put in one sentence for it to not be a run-on sentence? It's unreal. You can listen to him talk for 30 minutes. You have no idea what he said.
And what I've learned is a lot of that stems from trauma. So that stems. Yeah, and so that's kind of why this story is, for me, I'm fascinated in what makes people the way that they are. Yeah.
And
understanding
something about his childhood.
Yeah. There's a lot to be. It's a lot that Dave revealed about his childhood without really revealing to everything. You know, I've done some deep dives and know probably more than I should. And a lot of it's assumption, but I really believe that many of us have unresolved childhood traumas, and they show up in our relationships, and they kind of intensify as we get older if we don't resolve them. And I think that was really true for Dave. I think that he had some, I don't want to say abandonment, but almost neglect, even though his parents were there. And so that's why you see this reenactment of trauma, right? Like this reenactment of this is what I know, this is what's familiar, is someone who's so busy they can't pay attention to me. Someone who's so focused on everything else that I just need to show up and prop up and be next to them. And I think Dave was really good at orchestrating and being in the wings for people. And I think once he stepped into the limelight, what happened is, and this is true for a lot of people who become accidentally famous almost, they have notoriety because of social media. And we've seen this happen. Someone gets a TikTok video and the next thing you know, they've got 4 million followers.
Sure.
And I think that and this is going to happen more and more, where we're going to see influencers who've got there almost by accident, because it happens every day. And then the money starts coming in. And now you're stuck on this hamster wheel, but you're not prepared because you don't know who you are. And you've got past traumas. And now you're really feeding off of the positive, and you're dipping to a deep low from the negatives. And we're seeing influencers who unalive themselves, who get addicted to drugs, or who have to just completely
run away. Yeah,
just leave, because they weren't prepared, because they don't know who they are and where their value comes from. And so they misinterpret that parasocial relationship as having meaning, when that's not what makes you valuable. You know, how many likes you get or what people say in the comments, if you don't know who you are, that is going to take you on a massive ride. And I think that's exactly what happened to Dave Hollis.
I 100% agree with you on this. You know, you told me about watching the D'Amelios, and I watched. So for those of you that don't know, on Hulu, there's a series, I think it's been three seasons now, based on Charli and Dixie D'Amelio and then their parents. These are, I mean, they have hundreds of millions of followers as a family together.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Charli got really famous on TikTok from the early days of TikTok. And I'm on season two. It's a struggle. I'm not going to lie, because I don't think, if I'm going to be really true and honest, I think they lack personality, these girls, which is why it's so interesting to me that they're so famous, because it's kind of like, are you there? Are we here? But they say this in this one episode on season two, Charli specifically says, it's so weird that so many people tell me they love me and I end up in bed every night just at home alone. And that's the truth. At the end of the day, when you have these parasocial relationships, well, it works great when they're all loving you, but they will turn.
Oh, and absolutely. They do turn,
right? They the little smallest thing. And that, you know, with Dave and Rachel, when Dave and Rachel announced their literally shocking divorce, I knew that they weren't perfect. I never thought they would admit it to the world. Mm. And this is the thing about celebrity relationships that break up. And I'm curious what your thoughts are, because we were just talking briefly before about YouTube family couples, or like Jason. We're talking about Bethany and Jason.
Yeah.
Bethany Frankel and Jason, and any of these famous relationships, it's like you feel like the whole world is kind of like cheering for you. And they don't look at Teresa and the Golden Bachelor. Like, you feel like the world is fighting for you and you don't want to let them down. So you hold on to your relationship.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So what do you think it was for Rachel and Dave to finally call it quits in 2020?
Well, based on what she's disclosed, what he's disclosed, and then my filling in the gaps, I think that they were, and this is just my personal opinion, for those of you who aren't like familiar with this part of the story, they were doing marriage counseling, they were doing marriage conferences, they were doing a marriage podcast, Rise Together. They would often do challenges for couples to get closer together, have more
sexy
sex.
September.
And it wasn't never as forget. If they were saying they were perfect, but that certainly is how many of their viewers took them to be. It's like, okay, this is what I've been looking for. I don't have a model for what a healthy, you know, quirky couple can look like, and that has kids and they love each other and they have lots of sex. And so this is my model. And I think people invested a lot into their relationship. And when they then announced their divorce suddenly, just a few months into the pandemic, everyone was shocked, number one. Shocked. But their fans had a visceral reaction. It was, you felt like it was children who had been told by their parents that they were getting divorced. They were like, how dare you? We believed you. You've betrayed us. You lied to us. Like, people were terribly hurt by another couple's decision. And I have a hard time understanding that, because I think, like, humans are flawed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do end up divorced. And to think that any relationship is impermeable, any relationship is perfect, is, I mean, that's on you, right?
Yeah.
Now, do I think it was probably a misguided decision to do marriage conferences? Absolutely. But I don't personally believe that they intentionally scammed people. I don't think that Rachel thought this marriage is going to end. I think they were going so fast and so fierce and so focused on the fame and the money that they weren't feeling anything. It's a dissociative state when fame takes over like that.
It's so interesting. I feel like maybe they, or they either that, yes, for sure that, and maybe she did think, because she is the one that officially wanted the divorce. We know that. Mm-hmm. They both have admitted to that. But maybe she thought in those times that they were planning the marriage conferences and when they were doing Rise Together, maybe she actually did think that it was going to work out and it was going to be fine. I don't know if she was like, this is obviously going to end in divorce, but let's suck them dry.
I don't think so. You know, and again, I can only refer to my own experience. So, you know, Brett and I are great together and we could do a marriage conference. I won't. But like, I don't think we could even tell people how to have a marriage as tight as ours. And I don't want to. But also, if I found out something tomorrow as devastating as perhaps what Rachel did, you know, we all have a point at which we're like, enough. You know what
so
I mean?
And what so- could this have been is my question. And no one really knows, obviously, but something must have happened for it to be so big for her. Or maybe it was just the straw that broke the camel's back. Maybe it was just that one little thing, but something happened that we, that we found out later in her podcasts. And, you know, there were demons, right? So those probably kept creeping out and something must have happened. And you speculate on this.
Well, I don't think that it's the drinking, but that was a really, it was a story that was acceptable. You know, they both had said he'd been struggling with drinking and then he had broken a promise to stop drinking. That was kind of the story. It's what we thought. At least that was kind of his story. And Rachel wasn't talking.
Yeah.
You know, sometime later after Dave eventually got together with a new girlfriend, Heidi Powell, a fitness influencer, and kind of stepped into almost like a parallel universe where he was sitting again right next to this woman who was doing all the talking and she was
rinse
in her
expertise.
Yeah. You know, it's just like that familiar, uncomfortable. He wanted to get back into something that was so uncomfortable, but yet it was familiar. And he starts drinking heavily again and perhaps other addictive behaviors. And he ends up in a rehab. And when he's in rehab, Rachel then records a podcast explaining again, with not a lot of specificity, but saying that, you know, there were things in their marriage that had been, she knew had been going on and suspected were going on for more than 5 years. And she was just very cryptic. She said things like, ladies, if you think something is awry, if you think something's not right, it's not right. And I wish I hadn't fought for my marriage as hard as I did. She made a lot of statements that certainly alluded to something more than alcohol. She said, I didn't feel safe to be intimate with my partner. And words like that, for women anyways, our ears go, like,
yeah,
interesting. That's not something you would say because someone's, I don't think, I could be wrong,
drinking
excessively. Yeah.
Well, no, it does feel like there was something a little deeper, a little bigger, a scarier, you know, something more intense. Because just like you said, with your situation about your husband, you discovered that he had a secret addiction. It wasn't drinking. It was gambling, just as bad, if not, you know, damaging in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And you, what you did, which is what I think part of love is like, if you're willing to fix this, we can work on this together. And there was never a feeling of, you know, he was drinking too much. I'm sticking with him. We're getting through this. We're working on these things. It's like cutting ties because of the drinking. It didn't connect. It doesn't make a lot of sense from what, from an outsider's perspective, it's always going to be something deeper, but you're right. She did mention the intimacy and she mentioned like the fear and the lying. And I think the podcast episode was something called like, I don't know, things, if you know these things, like things I wish I knew or something along those lines.
I have a little quote from one of them. She said, it was very unhealthy for our children. All of those things were true. I said what truths felt like I could say, but I didn't want to reveal all the truths that my children were not aware of and are still not aware of. And I also just feel like it was shitty to talk about someone else's truths.
Mm.
Yeah, the truth finds a way to come out. I guess that's the headline here. Now listen, now break that apart. She said, I also feel like it's shitty to talk about someone else's truths. She didn't say to talk about someone else's addiction or someone else's
struggles,
demons, his truths. And you've heard this many times. She said, someday he'll tell his story.
Mm.
It's his story to tell. So to me, there's just a lot more. There was more that's there. And Dave himself constantly in later episodes of his podcast and later interviews, I've heard his voice changes. He stops using that weird kind of like, like I'm a broadcasting kind of guy. He starts talking like a human, you know, and you can hear his voice crack and you hear him constantly saying, I'm so afraid to show people who I am. I'm so terrified that people will find out who I am. That's,
you know, where my mind goes.
Probably the same as mine.
Yeah. It's pretty it's pretty devastating when you kind of follow Dave's journey after the divorce, because he ends up, like, I remember in those early days, I was just so team Dave. I just felt so sad for him. And he really, he was the one speaking. Rachel wasn't.
Yeah.
And so he was kind of like giving off this, you know, trying to make it work, single dad, love my kids. And you talk a lot about this, and you guys have to listen, because she goes into detail, Shalene goes into detail about this 2-hour Instagram live that he does that is the most, it's kind of like a rock bottom moment, I would say, in his life, in the sense that it was public, it was live. And for 2 hours in the early morning hours, and he, I'm just going to say it, this is like allegedly or whatever, but he seemed super kind of like quote unquote cracked out. Like he hadn't slept. Mm-hmm. He was
manic.
Manic is a great word for it.
Dry mouth, eyes bulging.
Talking to like a million miles a minute, saying the same thing over and over, like attacking his listeners. So he had just written this book, his second book. And remember, we didn't talk about this. You talk about this, but he had written a book right when the pandemic hit. So he that was a fail for what it should have been, right? He was going to go on the Today Show and that all got canceled.
Yeah.
And then this book. And this book was really a fail, to the point where I just remember following people online that said, this is one of the hardest books to read. It's horrendous. It's so bad. At this point, I was kind of like moved on from following every second, but he got so upset at his followers. Like, how are you not buying my book? 18 American dollars. If you aren't buying my book, why are you following me?
And I think what really upset Dave is when, because he'd filmed that live, and in that period of time, I forget how many hours he was on live for, his kids were there and they kept coming into the shot, which they often did when the two of them were live, but they kept coming into the shot and trying to get his attention, like, Dad, look at my Halloween costume. Dad, will you make us breakfast? Dad, will you make us pancakes? Will you make us pancakes? And, you know, we've all been in a situation where you want to shoot your kids out of the way because you're on a Zoom or you're on a call, but in his state, coupled with how long that video was and how they had always professed that they were like these great parents, it just created, and he was so sensitive to any negative commentary online. And that's when the internet just exploded. It became anti-Dave, and they called it Pancake Gate. And there were just so many content creators were chopping up that video, the worst segment. So, I mean, Donna, think about the moments where you've like, you know, not proud as a mom. I know I've had them
a million times.
And I'm just like,
a day?
Thank God there's not a camera. Like I'm mortified.
100%.
But there was no camera there. But for him, there was a camera, and it was copy and paste.
And it was his own choice for a camera, which is the craziest thing. Like that was the thing. He was not thinking clearly, obviously, in those moments, because we've seen, and I do believe Dave was a good dad. Like he seemed like a good dad, but in those moments, something was more important to him than being a dad. And that was getting people to buy this book. It was the obsession with succeeding and getting a level of something now, you know, and it wasn't happening. And then meanwhile, he's in this relationship with Heidi, who you say is like literally the blonde version. I mean, very different, of course, but a blonde version of his ex-wife sitting on these lives. They're doing challenges together. It was the craziest thing. I was like, come on, Dave is doing another, like he did so many challenges with Rachel. All of a sudden the challenges are back.
Heidi and Dave and their relationship is they both, in my personal opinion, were the less secure partner. Mm. And I think they both were like, okay, so America, the public loves us when we're with our kids. We're a family. So now let's like do that times two. And let's bring your family and my family. And so their social content was all 8 kids because he had 4 and she had 4. And they were always showing each other's kids. And I don't want to say, I don't think the right word is using, but I do know that Dave felt much more comfortable if the attention was on someone else, whether it was Noah or his daughter or one of his sons. And so they were putting them in a lot of content. And frankly, that was the times. Like, I think we're a little bit more aware now that, yeah, it's like really cute and it might get me extra likes, but is my kid really old enough to consent to this? And
yeah, I mean,
they did a lot of that.
But going way back, like, I just remember, I mean, I grew up with their kids. I feel like I grew up with them. Like, I saw that little Ford who's the third kid. I saw him since he was a little tiny, tiny little, you know, 4-year-old, 5-year-old. And Rachel, even early in those days, she'd have an office here in Glendale, and where she would do like studio stuff. She had this like Rach Talk on YouTube at the time, which was her first version of what eventually kind of became her YouTube podcast, et cetera. But Ford would come in. They really utilized their kids in a lot of their content. And then the older two kind of grew out of it and became a little bit more private. And then, you know, eventually, but this was really kind of part of their, I hate using the word shtick, but Heidi and Dave specifically, Rachel really pulled away from showing her kids at that time. And
after
Dave,
the divorce.
Yeah. And Dave leaned on it.
Yes.
And it was very Brady Bunch like, right? Look at us and a million kids. It was always like me and you and a million kids about him and Heidi. They would travel together. They integrated those families so fast. Like if you're not on social media, Shalene, and you and Brett, like if you had young kids and you and Brett separated and you met another guy, like would you go on family vacations with 8 kids so fast within like 3 months?
No.
It's crazy. No.
You know,
it's
and wild. If I'm being like completely like so honest, I remember when that became really popular, like showing your kids and oh my gosh, if you've got cute kids, you're gonna blow up on YouTube. You're gonna your Instagram posts, like you know, you just, if you had cute little kids, like that was, the algorithm loved it. And I remember thinking, dang it, why are you guys all like you're like awkward, geeky middle schoolers. Nobody's going to think that's cute. Like you've ruined social media for me. Like I had you too early, you know?
I think your son's doing just fine on social media. I'm just going
to
say.
He's taken to it, hasn't he? But they, you know, I just, that was kind of like the thing, you know, and that's when you see all these like vlog, like family vloggers and things. And so I think they kind of were so desperate. Now think about it. Dave has left and, you know, Rachel's left him. There's no more Hollis Co. Dave's on his own. He doesn't have a real business plan other than the books, and books don't make money. And his books really don't make money if they're not selling and people aren't bringing you onto their stages to speak. And so everything's kind of failing. And at this point, Dave is already said that he completely saw his worth from success. And it was a marriage was failing and businesses were failing and books were failing and seminars were being canceled. And he was struggling with addiction and Heidi and he were getting together and breaking up and getting together and breaking up. And then he had this public meltdown. We assume there were probably other substances, you know, based on his, the way in which he died. We can maybe assume that he was taking something else at that time. It's hard to say. I'm only speculating, but he's spiraling. And then he comes into the holiday seasons, which were for anyone a really difficult time if you're struggling with your mental health. And he really struggled during the holidays. And then he just made poor decision after poor decision in January and the first couple of weeks of February, leading up to his death on February 11th of 2023. He and Heidi were broken up at the time. I do find it, I would love to know, honestly, what Rachel Hollis, because I want to give her props and say, I think she's done a real bang up job of protecting her kids. You know, people can have problems with her not sharing the whole story, but why are we entitled to it? I know we want to know it, but like ultimately I think the right thing to do is to protect your kid. Even if it sometimes it means your reputation might get harmed in the process.
100%. And this is like something that I really struggle with online when I hear, you know, people just to kind of make a little left turn, this Bethany Frankel podcast, while I think it's really interesting to hear about this divorce, this 10-year divorce on a 2-year marriage with her ex Jason Hoppe, her daughter is a teenager and she says very clearly, I spoke to Bryn about this. She knows it's coming. She knows I'm doing this. Well, she's your daughter. What, she's going to say don't? And even if she did say don't, I'm sure Bethany would say, no, don't worry. I'm not going to use his name. At the end of the day, at what point do you realize that you're maybe damaging your kid more than telling your truth? Because now this is going to sound really like embarrassing for me that I'm using this as an example. But I'm watching this new show called Grand Cayman. It's a reality show on Hulu. And you know Armie Hammer, the actor who was like, he got canceled for cannibalism, basically, in the bedroom. His ex-wife is the lead of the show. And the producers keep asking, so tell us about Army. And she goes, I will not talk badly about him because I can't handle giving my kids daddy issues. I want them to think he's a superhero.
Wow.
Which is like a really big move considering he was like publicly, you know, awful. I think that there is something to be said about that. These people that for some reason think that it's okay. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's absolutely horrible. And even if it, there's a 2% chance that it's going to in any way impact the way your kid feels about themselves. Why would you do that? You don't need to. And I know her mission is people love it. People freaking love it.
It's doing very well.
Like, you're doing God's service and you know, you're helping so many women who are going through divorce. I think that's really remarkable, but my kids come first and their mental health come first. And we see ourselves as a part of both parents. And so to have somebody with that kind of fame and platform, you know, I saw the episode that she did with Brynn, where Brynn says, you know, my friends watch your YouTube and my friends watch your social and they talk about you and they blah, blah, blah. And they screenshot when I'm on camera and they show me that I had this ugly face in this part. And so we already know she's being impacted by it. We already know that she's not being restricted in any way on social media. She says she spends, you know, 2 hours or more watching TikTok and Instagram, no problem. But then to create this huge piece that's about your other, it's half of her. And to go on and make, these are probably things that are all true from Bethany's perspective, but to hear your own mother say such really grandiose, horrible things about
literally saying, father. I was tortured having sex with him. Having sex with him was torture. So knowing that your mom and your felt that way about your dad, weird, number one, and also
your grandparents,
kind of shitty. And then about the grandma. That's another thing. I think Brynn, like she talks about, Bethany talks about how Jason's mom allegedly forged her notary state and forged Bethany's signature to get an apartment. I don't know. It's a long story and listen to the podcast, but that's your grandma. I don't know. It just feels tricky.
Yeah, I believe that there are things that are you know, important for the world and we all have a purpose. But I mean, Bethany's lived through 20 different purposes. And at a certain point you have to say, but ultimately I have to protect my child's well-being. And that is why I was, you know, bringing me to the Rachel Hollis part of it. And she's been, you know, still very careful not to ever disclose those things that people want to know because I think she's, you know, thinking of her kid's best interest. After Dave passed, a statement was given to the Wall Street Journal about an incident that happened the night before Dave had an accidental overdose on cocaine, fentanyl, and alcohol. And in that situation, Heidi went to the shared with the press the name of the kid and the child who had discovered all of these very hypercritical videos and, you know, like hate videos about Dave. And this, I'm not going to say the child's name, but this, you know, child saw those videos and went to Dave and said, you know, Dad, do I have permission to defend you? And that was devastating to Dave. Now that story might be true. Why does an adult share that story? It doesn't need to be shared with the press. Mm-mm. Now that child for the rest of their lives might wonder, was I the straw that broke the camel's back? Was it me going to my dad and telling him that this upset me, that was too much for him?
Yeah, because she clearly stated like in such strong words that that devastated Dave right before he died. Yeah, you're right.
Before he died. And I can't imagine. You're just not thinking straight or you're more concerned with
the public persona, like feeling bad for him and you know, poor guy.
Or being the know-it-all. You know, it's that person who like, they're like your fan, but they hear someone saying something negative about you. And they're like, I got something, you know, just because it's like, here's my moment to be important and relevant. And I can't imagine what Rachel Hollis felt and wanted to probably do after reading that. I know as a mother, like the mother bear in me would want to claw your eyes out. Like that you would in any way, shape or form pull my child into this, put their name in the Wall Street Journal.
Oh my gosh. I can't. Awful. And, you know, speaking of, obviously, Heidi, apparently they were separated at the time of his death. However, they had just recently traveled together because I remember following this and seeing this crazy, oh, we're back here. Dave is on this, you know, retreat with these huge Brendan Burchard and Amy Porterfield and Jasmine Starr. And I can't think of all of them off the top of my
Lewis
head.
Dowles and Trent Lewis and Mel Robbins and all of them. Influencers.
Exactly. All if you go into under self-help books, it's like all the bestsellers, right? Or the podcast. So he's on that retreat. Apparently he goes to the hospital. We don't have any like confirmation. It's just what people said, right? Allegedly he had gone
Talked to people who were there. Yeah.
Oh, so he really did go to the hospital for heart issues.
He did.
But he didn't share it with the audience.
At the table. That's right. Actually, there's a lot of things I've discovered that he didn't share with the audience.
From that weekend?
No, from the months prior leading up to. But yeah, specifically that weekend, no, he did not share that. And that's unusual. It's kind of telling, you know?
Well, we knew every little thing about these people. I mean, they lived their life on social media. So for him not to just leave out the fact that he went to the hospital is a pretty big deal and probably comes a little more from like a shame or some hiding something, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
And meanwhile, you know, the fandom, the Rachel Dave fandom started to really kind of latch on to Heidi in terms of following Heidi's every move
and picking up her. Yeah. They still don't like her.
Like beyond on all the threads and the forums. So sadly, Dave passes away, shocks the shit out of me. I mean, I remember these Hollises keep shocking me. Like I remember being, I think I audibly gasped. I don't think I slept that night. It hit me. Like I was in the family because the parasocial relationship was real. I was used to every day seeing his face on my phone and watching. I mean, I love Kia, right? Kia's World. So I would watch Kia's World videos and we would like have fun watching. All of a sudden that was gone. Now, meanwhile, Rachel since then has been in a relationship even before he died with this new man who she's now engaged to. We don't see a lot of the kids. We see random pictures here and there, the back of their heads.
Yeah.
Heidi is off doing her own thing. I don't even know, like selling supplements. I don't really follow what's going on there. What do you think where do you think this goes for Rachel? Where is she going to go with her career in your opinion?
That I don't know, you know, and if I'm being completely honest, midway through doing this project, I lost interest in her and in Heidi, especially in Heidi, because it's just like, I have no interest in like picking people apart who I just don't get, you know? But I'm fascinated by Dave's story. And, you know, talk about that parasocial relationship. I'd met him once backstage at a speaking event, 5 minutes, not even. I kind of thought he was like kind of douchey. Like I didn't like him. And I can't tell you how many times I have just been gripped by emotion, reading or finding something out about him. I've laid in my bed crying, just feeling so heartbroken for his 7-year-old. You know what I mean? Like that this guy never, and it's not that no one, and he had lots of opportunities to get therapy. He did therapy. He just never went there. And my heart breaks for him because I know there's so many people out there that are like this. And so the moral for me and the purpose, the meaning behind doing this story is to help people to remember that we are all human and not everyone who's in the public eye, because we're always like, they're a public figure. I can say what I want with my cat profile, but not everyone is equipped to handle it. And not everyone has been healed. And we all have stories and it's one thing to like make sense and make meaning of things. It's another to just like tear people apart, especially when you know they're down. And it's a lot about a parasocial relationship. Like we think of the parasocial relationship as we, the viewer, feeling like we know the person who's broadcasting, But as you know, Donna, like when you're the broadcaster, you start to feel like you know the people who are viewing too. The parasocial goes both ways.
Totally.
It's weird.
It is. It is. And there's still like, this is happening left and right. Just this week on TikTok, how that's this big influencer, Kyle Marissa Roth, passed away. And like her fans and, you know, 700,000 people following her on TikTok, like devastated, shocked. Just it's rocked their world. And this will continue in this like influencer and viewers kind of life. And we have to remember that even though Dave was storing, Insta storing everything, we felt like we knew everything about his life. That's 15 seconds, 30 seconds. It's like we got 4 minutes of an entire day and we felt like we got it all. He was living an entire life without us being aware. And I guess you're going to get more into that, which I'm so excited to hear.
And the truth is you can be living with someone 24/7 and still not really know what's going on. You know, like humans are flawed. I don't know. It's just like all of it makes me pull back from social a little bit. It makes me more empathetic. It makes me empathetic towards all creators, content creators. It's tough. And you know this, like it can really take a toll on your mental health. And you have to be certain of who you are. And even still, it can be tough.
Even on my strongest days, if I read a negative comment, if it captures me, I notice, I may not even realize it, but I notice my vibe changes, my mood changes. It does come in, it seeps in. It's like a bad smell. Like you smell it, like it's in there, you know, but even if you can walk away from it 5 minutes later, but I think it also depends on your fragile state. And if I was going through something really hard in my personal life and getting that, like Dave was, it maybe would have been too much for me too. So yeah, I love this idea. You guys, that's another thing about this Patreon series that you really have to subscribe to immediately. I also heard that you're going to take it off this tier at some point.
I don't know what to do. I can't do this again. I cannot do this again. It was just like a ridiculous amount of time. It's not my job. It's not my business. You know what I mean? And also I can't think of another situation where it would feel, I don't know, I'd be this intrigued by it. I just don't know. But so I usually on my Patreon, I just like shoot the shit and share my things that I probably can't on the regular podcast, you know, like you do. And I call it keep me company content. Like I subscribe to your Patreon because I just like you to keep me company.
Just like a friend in your ear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't even know half the shows. I don't watch half the shows you talk about, but I'm like, just keep talking.
Totally. And I love that about your content. And you also teach me a ton. You guys, if you're not following Shalene, she talks so much about health, about fitness, about perimenopause, about her romantic life with her husband, her hot husband, and their sex life. I'm sorry, I feel awkward saying this out loud, but you talk a lot about how hot and heavy your relationship is.
I do. Oh, no,
yeah, you do. I don't want to know what you're using that castor oil for, but I know it's not just your face. Okay. You're really adorable. And you to me are the best person to follow. But so many hacks, like I'm always learning from you. You teach like just about not just physical hacks and physical health stuff, but also emotional, mental. You teach us about things. You show us about your dad and his struggles through Alzheimer's, right? Alzheimer's and you go to the villages, you're just fun follow.
Well, thanks. That's really sweet.
Yeah, no, you live a great life. And also I'm not going to say this out loud. That feels weird. Well, I'll say it. I need your body. Like I just need your body.
So you have an amazing physique.
Well,
it's I need to. F45, isn't that what you do?
What'd you say?
What is the workout you do? F45?
I do F45. I do weightlifting, but I've really followed your advice. I do a lot of walking now. I do walking on my walking pad. I try to walk over 10,000 steps a day plus weightlifting.
Wow. That's so good. I know walking. Like what? What? I just can't even believe I'm so into it. I used to like mock people. I'm like, walking? What is that? You know, and now I'm like obsessed. Brett likes to pretend that I invented it, but
you look amazing. Amazing.
Well, thank you.
You guys, please do me a favor and go follow Shalene. Shalene, do you mind I'll put everything in the show notes, but anyone that's listening, what is your Instagram account? And then
at Shalene Johnson. Yeah. Easy. And the Patreon is Patreon/The Shalene Show.
I'm going to put it in the show notes. Thanks. Please go over there, leave her a comment and tell her you came from Daily Dose of Donna. This will be Like, remember that day that we spent all Sunday watching Who the F Did I Marry on TikTok? This is going to be your next Sunday binge. Like,
oh, that's
you're
so fun.
So lucky you get 10 episodes of it, because now I'm just waiting. Like, I'm like, give it to me, Charlene. I want the next episode. So such an interesting / sad story.
Yeah.
Of the Hollises.
And I love for people when drop. So for me, these last couple of episodes, what I want to do is do my best to answer the unanswered questions. Mm-hmm. So if you've been following along, if you're someone who followed them for years and you still have unanswered questions, or maybe you've listened to the series, if you'll drop your comments below this video, I'm going to read through all of them, because that's what I use to figure out, like, where do I need to go next?
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I mean, you're very connected with your audience. I love that so much. Thank you, Charlene. All the links are below. You guys make sure to go follow her, and I'll talk to you soon.
That was so fun.